You're listening to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle, right here on LA Talk Radio.
And the man is right. You are listening to Dr. Michelle. We are on the couch, as we always are, on Tuesdays around noon here, Pacific Standard Time, and wherever you are listening in your own time zone around the world. Welcome, everybody. I have an amazing guest today, and a subject that I don't usually talk about that often. It just, for some reason, doesn't come up many times in my interviews, because many of my guests are self-help psychologists, sort of gurus, people who are more into the quantum consciousness concepts, things like that. But today we're going to be talking about a parenting revolution. What has gone on in early parenting in our history, and where we're at now, and what needs to change. That's what it's all about, is making change and how we can do that effectively. And my special guest here is, of course, Julie Hatch. There she is. Hi, Julie.
Hello there, Dr. Michelle. Nice to see you.
Oh, great to see you. I'll give you a little introduction so people will know all about your background, which is vast, especially when it comes to helping children and rearing and understanding a very healthy way of dealing with children and helping them become incredible souls. Julie, you are a pediatric nurse practitioner, a parenting coach, a pediatric acupuncturist. That's hard to say, but what a wonderful, wonderful occupation. By the way, although you look like you're 24, you spent over 30 years working in pediatric and neonatal intensive care. And after a transformative medical mission trip to Brazil, which we're going to be talking about a little bit, you returned home to pursue, I just can't do it today for some reason, more holistic, complementary forms of healthcare. And you'll be hearing a little bit more about Julie's traditional Chinese medicine studies. And of course, that's where she learned acupuncture and herbal medicine. And her approach to parenting blends both Western and Eastern medicine. And I'm going to talk a little bit more about that. So I'm giving you a tease of what that's about. Julie, by the way, is host of her own podcast called Mums on a Mission with Julie Hatch. So today we're talking about her latest book and various assorted and sundry other things about raising children. It's called A Parenting Revolution for Higher Evolution, Raising Resilient, Responsible, Compassionate Kids from the Inside Out. Whoa, what a great book. I mean, could not put it down. I'm a mom, and I am just a grandmom too. So I learned so much from you, and what a beautifully written book. And thank you so much for doing that.
Thank you, and congratulations on being a grandmom. I'm not there yet, but looking forward to it.
Thank you. It's the best. I was thinking, oh my gosh, it's the best. So we'll just kind of jump right into it. And according to you, as parents, We sort of need to shift this current negative trend, the direction in which kids are being raised. And you suggest it should be toward a more positive, soul-based, heart-based, truth-based direction, which we all need. So am I right about sort of your ideas here?
Yes, you put that very well. Heart-based, truth-based. That's exactly right. A little less high pressure, a little less criticizing and judging, and a lot more encouragement and nourishing the true them, who they are at the core, their souls.
Yeah, that's beautiful. So what basically was it that inspired you to write this book?
A couple of reasons. One was that I've just seen a lot, both in my practice, but also just all around, a lot of, and reading about a lot of anxiety and depression in kids. Pre-COVID, COVID hasn't helped it, but even long before COVID, anxiety and depression have been big, big problems with kids. And I have ideas as to how we might be able to help that out, because that's really not fair for kids to go into adulthood already overloaded with anxiety and depression.
Right.
And the other thing is that I see parents, and I'm no Mrs. Mom. I am not a perfect mother by any means. I never was, but I did okay. But I see a lot of the way that parents deal with kids, what I see in public, and I think they need a little more, and I don't want to judge, but I really think that they need a little more enlightenment about conscious parenting, holistic parenting, but really conscious parenting, which you had alluded to, the consciousness. And so those are the two reasons really why I wrote the book.
Beautiful. And we're also going to find out a little bit more about your work when you were traveling. So talking about child development and how things go in the child brain, which you are an expert on, we know that children up to what, age 8, are in more of a theta brainwave of their development.
Yeah.
And then after that, they begin to segue into, you know, the beta consciousness. Right. So their frontal lobe is developing and they're starting to realize it's no more magical playtime. We have to, you know, the broom is not my horse anymore. And, you know, mom's large spoon is not the magic wand. And oh my God. So what's going on in the developmental stages of children? Maybe you can elaborate a little bit more on that, from the little ones, you know, into even teen years, and what are we soaking up in our environment according to our growth?
That's it. That's the big thing that I know of, is that from even before birth, I think even when they're in utero, they are absorbing everything from us.
I agree.
But certainly from age 0 to 8 is really arguably the most important time in a person's life. Very formative, and you know, we don't remember a lot of it. I think that memory starts around verbal, once we become verbal. So a lot of it we don't remember, but it's all, we're soaking it all in. We're soaking in what we see around us, what we hear, the energy that we feel, whether there's loving energy or whether there's arguing energy, it gets picked up and absorbed by kids. And as parents, I don't think that we're quite so aware of it, but it has a big impact on a child's development and how they're going to go, what's going to happen after those first 8 years. And I think developmentally that is a milestone, I think, is 7 and 8 years old, but also that's also the age that they then kind of venture out into the world and are exposed to friends and other parents and teachers and things like that. So for those first few years, we are their world. And so what we display to them, what we exhibit in front of them, is that's how they learn about the world. You know, if you're a person who tells your child that you love them all the time, then they think love is what the world is all about. And contrary to that, if there's none of that, then that's what they think the world is. So
beautiful. Now, you in your book, you talk about how raising kids has changed all the way from the early 1900s until the present. Can you sort of give us a line of how that has changed?
I think that what I wrote about in my book is that I think parenting, I also wrote about schooling and how school system has changed from agricultural time to what it is now. Sure. But parenting, I think Dr. Benjamin Spock, who was a parenting guru back in the 60s or 70s, I think, change things, because I think it used to be very punitive. Children were supposed to be seen and not heard. Children were hardly even acknowledged as real human beings. And then Dr. Spock came through and said it made it a kinder, gentler way of parenting, and I think helped with bonding helping the parents to figure out how to bond with their kids and be a little bit more loving kind of parents, understanding that their kids are people.
Exactly. No, that's beautiful. And that, you know, I remember my mom telling me it was sometime in the 60s, late 60s, maybe, she was reading Dr. Spock all the time. And that's how her thing, you know, was, that was her, you know, the way she raised us.
Yeah.
Siblings. So, you know, she said that, you know, he knows that's the right way to do it. You know, and I But I mean, that was the Bible of child rearing back then, right?
That's true. That was the book.
Yeah. So in your book, you start getting into an amazing concept that children are not being raised now according to their inner spirit. And you say that they're being raised in the, you know, exterior environment, which is chaotic. It's the surface life. Mm. So what is living in the surface life?
Living in the surface life is getting all of your feelings of self-worth, confidence, a sense of who you all are from the outside, from your parents telling you either good things or bad things about you and your friends and commercialism and the beautiful models and Facebook and all of these external influences, either denying or accepting who you are. And that sort of shapes then how you grow into yourself, which is not really the real you, it's rather a reaction to what you're receiving from the environment around you.
Yes.
Versus
yes.
The inner you, which is about the raising the child from the inside out, is to understand, help the child to understand themselves, but really as parents, we first have to understand ourselves and then understand our kids' inner world, their inner spirit, their true nature, what drives them, what enlivens, what makes them who they are.
Yes.
Because, you know, their GPA, good or bad, is not who they are. You know, maybe they're natural students and maybe being learning and being a student is part of their inner nature, but maybe not. Or their beautiful, sexy body is not who they are. It's just an external surface.
Right.
Superficial.
Ooh, no, it's so true. It's just so, and we'll get in that to that a little bit later too, is about how social media in you know, these kids' lives have completely changed their perceptions about who they should be or what they should be. So not only do they have the social media pressure about the exteriors, but they have sometimes, you know, a lot of parental guidance, more pushing. You need to be a doctor. I mean, I actually have friends who both of the parents were doctors, medical doctors, and they told their boy and girl, basically, you need to be a doctor.
Yeah.
That's what we do in our family. And one was an artist. And the other a computer genius. So they went through it and painfully, and were not the happiest campers when they were young adults because they were forced into this.
Yeah. I saw working as a nurse practitioner in the hospital, I came across many, many medical students and residents who were just not happy with their decision. And going through medical school is really, really hard. Going through residency is super hard. And then if you really don't have a desire to be doing it, and it was all because their parents, they felt the pressure from their parents.
Right.
It was very sad. Many of them left
at
the last minute and which was, I guess, is better than continuing on. Some of them continued on and not happy and probably not the best doctors.
No, you're right. You know, because there has to be that passion for really wanting to follow
anything.
Anything. Absolutely. What I really loved also, and thank you so much in your book for sharing some personal information about yourself and some of the things you experienced in your upbringing. And you share that, you know, on the exterior, my life was comfortable and quote, worthy of envy to others sometimes, but they didn't know what was going on inside the home. Can you elaborate a little bit more on that?
Yeah. And I am very grateful for the upbringing that I had. Absolutely. Yes. There was no, that I consciously remember, no drama, no trauma. Everything was, I'm not going to say loving, but everything was comfortable. My family was always there, food on the table, provided an excellent education, lived in a really nice area of Massachusetts. But the only thing that was missing, which is kind of important, is that my mother was not, I said in my book, she ran out her family like she was CEO of a business. And everything was very practical. And we're going to do this, we're going to do this. There was no stopping to smell the roses, no, you know, kicking back and cuddling, or she was not a cuddly person. And so I don't mean to diss her at all.
I understand.
She's a a great mother, but the love was not there. I rarely, if I don't remember hearing "I love you," that was just not spoken openly. And yes. Of course, I knew that my parents loved me, but there was no expression of it. So that made me that kind of closed off my heart. I didn't really know what an open heart was while I was growing up. I knew how to, you know, get the good grades and do all the stuff you're supposed to do growing up in the kind of place that I grew up. But there was just not that loving compassion in my, I won't say not no compassion. There just wasn't that I love you demonstrative love in my house.
A lot of the warm fuzzies. So right. We sort of, as my sister describes it, sometimes when we discuss this, because we both have similar memories, it's like, we were like little soldiers when we were 4 years old, huh? And I go, well, that's a good way of
Yeah.
We're little soldiers. It's kind of scary, but true. Yeah. But I mean, it, you know, it really does. And I also encourage, as you probably do too, people to look at the backstory of our parents and, you know, the fears they had, why they parented us as little soldiers or without I love yous and warm fuzzies and things like that, because of their own fears and unresolved issues. So they have to, make sure everything's controlled in the environment, especially their children.
Yeah.
So they're, you know, focusing on business as usual. We've got to do this. And there's, you know, there's an understanding, and understanding that, which I know you do, is very important. But still, there's always that,
Yeah. And I think that a lot of people, we're probably from close to the same generation. I think a lot of us were raised that same way. I know that my mother was raised very regimentedly.
Yes.
So that's where that comes from. We often parent our kids the way that we were parented, which is what I would love to see if that's it doesn't work right to stop. But yeah, no. They do what they just like we do what we have to do or what we can do. We think we is doing the best. And so my mother thought she was doing the best, and you know, I came out fine, but it was just lacking a little bit.
Exactly. So you learned a lot from this. I mean, you learned a lot when you really, you know, went through your own experiences.
Yeah.
You know, working with children as well, you know, neonatal nursing and all that. That's amazing.
Yeah.
So this is what really happened to you. On the other side, I hear another issue, and you mentioned this also in your book about parenting, where the parents are so needy and controlling and codependent on their children, you know, and that's almost the opposite in a way. You know, I mean, they're just, what are you doing? What are you thinking? Where are you going? You have to look like this. You have, they're so, and you, I know, have grown up with people who are like this and have suffered this. Can you elaborate a little bit more on that you talk about in your book?
I think that gets in, that's the ego getting in the way of, it is us needing to feel important as parents that we know best. And yes, we're supposed to teach our kids, but I think we're supposed to guide them rather than force them, because we don't always know what's best for them, really. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we interject our ego into what we think they should be and what we want them to be and what society thinks they should be, which really doesn't have much to do with who they really are and who they are and what they should be doing. And I mean should as in self, from their inner work, not from what society is saying what they should be doing. So we interject ourselves and pressure them. And we also, like you say, we codependent. There's a lot of that with some parents and their kids, and that's not healthy for the kids. You know, feed something for the parents certainly, but it's not necessarily feeding what the child needs from us.
Beautifully said. And by the way, in case everybody just kind of tuned in here on video and also just on the radio show here on LA Talk Radio, I'm talking to Julie Hatch, and she's written an amazing book. I really encourage you all, even, you know, you don't have to be parents. If you're thinking about becoming parents, if you are grandparents, maybe it's a good idea to really get what Julie is saying. And the book's called A Parenting Revolution for Higher Evolution. And the world is changing, folks. You got to come on now. grab up to the top rung and level up here. We're elevating our consciousness, and we all have to know that these kids are coming in as new beings and souls who need to really express themselves with who they are, who their souls are. And also, it's raising resilient, responsible, compassionate kids, again, from the inside out. So check it out. And we're going to tell you also where you can find out more about Julie and get her book as well. I really encourage you guys to read it. It's amazing. It's very, it's real. It's got scientific information in it. And again, which is so appropriate here for the couch, you know, that I'm a spiritual, if you want to say, person who's aware of mindfulness and being a more conscious being in spreading compassion and love, especially to the most important beings in our life, our little ones, you know. So let's talk a little bit more about raising that future generation of mentally healthy beings and compassionate kids. So we should probably check out the traditional Chinese medicine concept of inside out. Now, you've been mentioning that several times. So let's talk about what does that mean?
From the inside out, the Chinese in their medicine treat every disease, illness, and this could also be for raising kids, from the inside out. You get to the root cause of an illness or a disturbance in the person, and you treat the root cause, and then the symptoms and the outside will automatically correct or flourish. For instance, if you have a ruptured appendix and you have a stomach ache, you don't put a Band-Aid or you don't take Advil for a ruptured appendix. You need to go to make the stomach ache go away. You need to go and deal with a ruptured appendix. And when you do that, then everything is all better. So when you raise children from the inside out, when you get to the root of who they are, not a root cause of anything bad, like I just talked about with illness, but to who they are on the inside, their inner spirit, and you pay attention to that and you parent to that, then your child will pretty much automatically flourish in the way that they are meant to.
It's so true. You know, in order to do that and really help our kids, you have some wonderful exercises, and you talk about how we as parents, first of all, before we can do anything or share our knowledge or share our love, we have to connect with our own souls. We have to connect with our own deeper sense of who we are. What are some of the ways that we can do that?
Meditation, I think, and maybe that's a fancy word. Maybe that's an intimidating word. Just to sit quietly away from kids and away from the hullabaloo of life and just sit quietly. Yep. I really highly recommend to everybody, kids and adults alike, to spend time in nature. So if you can go somewhere and sit quietly on a tuft of grass or in the woods, that and you just be quiet.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of chatter going on in the head, but if you sit there long enough, then you can start to feel into your soul, who am I? What am I doing here? Who am I? But you got to get away from the chitter chatter of, oh my God, the busyness and the noise of life. So then add meditation to that, then great. Yoga sort of contributes to getting into that mindset.
Right.
So I think that is one really important thing to do, is try to sit by yourself quietly, preferably in nature, and just be.
No,
stop doing for a little while and just be. And that helps you get in touch, I think, with who you are, who your soul is, what your soul is all about.
Sure. And I think we all have a higher self within us. And when we do go quiet, we can, and try to spend time to do that if we can steal moments these days.
Yeah.
Go out in nature and again, breathe the air, go into a meditation, as you suggest, relaxed state, and really ask questions to our higher selves, ask questions to ourselves.
Yes.
You know, what are some of the best things that I can do for me that I can share with my children? What is the core of some of the most important, you know, things here as we are elevating our consciousness on this planet, and what can we share with our little ones, you know, to help them enjoy things too.
Right.
Yeah. So
and there's on my website, which I guess we'll get into in a little bit, and probably I think also in the book I have a recording of a meditation. It's a quick meditation. It's a good way to just sort of settle into, just being quiet by yourself.
Sure. It's a good one, by the way. And let me just put it out there, by the way, it's www.juliephillipshatch.com. juliephillipshatch.com. check it out right now, but don't go away. Just keep because we have more stuff to reveal, more to teach you parents what is so important for our kids and what they need to become, you know, better beings, perhaps on a higher level of consciousness. There's so much going on in this world right now, you know, that I don't know about you, but I have never seen such chaos contrasted with such an urge to have higher consciousness. There's such a yin yang thing going on in this world. Don't you see that too?
Yes, absolutely. In a way, it's kind of feels sort of divisive. There's certainly divisiveness, but the yin and yang. You're right. There's I don't want to speak judgmentally, but there's some that are trying to raise their consciousness, and then there's some that just are going the opposite direction.
Yeah.
Going down the tubes.
Yeah. No, it's really true, you know, and it's, and I think, you know, a lot of, and not to get off on other stuff, but I mean, I think there's a lot of fear-based living right now. I mean, I can't even watch the local news at night because it's very scary about everything going on. And,
yeah.
Everybody knows what we're talking about with the guns and the violence and the looting and the, not to mention the war and that's going on with, you know, Russia and the poor Ukrainians. That, I mean, it's all a strange, it's like surreal what's going on now and yeah. All these things that we're being presented.
And
our kids are just saying, hey, exactly. And the COVID, of course, I think you saw this too with issues forcing families to really deal with being in closed quarters with their little ones pulled out of school and their husbands or wives both working remotely and trying to, I mean, I have teletherapy sessions where little ones are running around behind poor mom or dad and it's fine. I'm used to it. I think it's cool because, you know, but it's been really tough.
Been really tough.
Everyone, it's just there's a chaotic vibe going on, and somehow we have to keep centered and keep really a higher level of kindness, right?
That's exactly right. And when you talk about fear-based, I think that's very true, and that can govern and dictate a lot of people's behavior. And I've learned in my older years that you can't control the war, and you can't control a lot of this stuff. All you can do is control how you respond to it and react to it, respond to it really,
yes.
And how you try to set yourself up to think and feel in a more positive, higher conscious way.
Right.
That's all we can do is control what we do and what we feel, our own actions.
It's so true. I agree. And, you know, not only, you know, do kids learn a lot from certain parenting styles that we have that may not be the best, you know, we're modeling behaviors. This is another thing. If we're stressed out or we're watching the news and we're talking with our partners in front of them about, oh my gosh, can you believe that I am so, you know, I don't want my kids out. You know, we have to be so careful with what we're energetically putting out and what we're talking about and the behavior that we're exemplifying for them, right?
So true. And people ask me, well, why is there so much anxiety in kids these days? And I think a lot of it is because we have anxious parents are anxious.
Yes.
And if a child sees to how to respond to a stressful situation in life through anxiety, or everything, the news, anxiety, and going out the front door to go to the supermarket and anxiety. If that's what they see, then they say, oh, well, you respond to stress by being anxious. So we're not teaching them healthy ways of handling stress or negative situations, because anxiety is not helpful. And so we don't want to be teaching them that kind of automatic response, which a lot of adults do have.
Sure they do, you know, and of course, not to mention children who have been exposed to, you know, some kind of abuse or verbal or, you know, visuals, or, you know, the loss of someone in their life that's been very hard for them to really make sense of.
Yeah.
You know? So, I mean, there's a lot of things, you know, going on. You did go into this a little bit, but not as much, but I had a personal question, you know, about the rise in ADD or ADHD in children. Do you think that's a product of our parenting or society, a lot of it?
I don't think there's a one easy, simple answer to that. I do think that ADHD, in some cases, and if you do my element quiz, it fits in with a certain element type, the wood type, where they're really active. It's just the way that kids are made, wood type. Really energetic, loud, boisterous, competitive, and that's just the way they are. And I think that schools and society have done a job at squelching that, making them sit still, making them conform to the traditional classroom. So you can call it ADHD, or you can call it exuberant child, or a wood type child, which nobody understands unless they know the five elements. Certainly there is ADHD. My middle child, I refused to give him medications at school because he had a developing brain. I just did not want to medicate him, and he wasn't that bad. I didn't think he was that bad at all.
Sure.
But then he started self-medicating when he got into college. He says, wow, I wish, you know, I'd had this back when I was, and he said, well, actually, Mom, probably most people would function a lot better if they were on Ritalin because they can focus more. So, you know, but maybe we have a culture of ADHD that needs help with focusing. I don't know. But I think that, labeling them as hyperactive, pain in the butt ADHD kids that need a pill is not necessarily necessary.
I agree with you. I totally, and I know, just, you didn't mention it, but I just know that you have listened to Dr. Wayne Dyer's chats about how he has raised his kids.
Yeah.
And they're very much in alignment with what you're saying too.
Yeah. Yep. Very much so.
It's very cool. I was like, oh yeah, you're right on. And doc, you know, that's the way to go. Julie, you have it down as well. By the way, in case you just tuned in here, you guys are on the couch, and I've got a special guest today, Julie Hatch, and she, oh my gosh, she has worked with children. She's a pediatric nurse, practitioner, a parenting coach, pediatric, this is where I have a problem, acupuncturist. She spent over 30 years working in pediatric and neonatal intensive care, and, you know, that is an amazing experience for you, Julie, to get a real feel and vibe and meet parents and watch, you know, the longitudinal growth of some of these families and these children. So what a beautiful experience. And you write from your education and your experience, which is beautiful. And by the way, if you would like to get a little bit more information, you can go to Julie Phillips Hatch. And it's Phillips, Phillips, Hatch, HATCH.com. You can find out more about her. But so another concept you talk about in your book is considering for our children the five element questionnaire and how it can sort of deepen our understanding of our particular children. So can you describe what that is?
Yeah, again, it's from Chinese medicine and a lot of Eastern Ayurveda and other cultures and religions and medicines have different elements. But in Chinese medicine, there are five elements, which are wood, fire, earth, metal, and water. And what that does when you can identify your child's element type as well as your own, as well as any siblings or any other parental people figures in the household, it tells you a lot about their personality, which you already know, but it tells you a little bit more about their true nature. Again, what I talked about before, who they are at the core, what drives them, what enlivens them, what motivates them, what stresses them and challenges them. And it's different for all different element types. As we all know, anybody who has more than one child, they're not all alike. They don't all
fit out
to the same kind of situation, or they don't all, you know.
That's so true.
So there are different five different element types that everybody falls under. Mm-hmm. And again, the traits are just enlightening. It's helpful to know where your child is coming from, what's going on inside here or in here that we don't always know because they maybe can't express it. But when you take the quiz and you find out what element type they are, it's just another way of how you see your child and how you understand your child, a different perspective. I think it's a healthier perspective. Again, it avoids labeling as hyperactive or lazy or any other horrible labels that we give our kids. This is just it's another way to describe your child.
And it's utilizing concepts, of course, taken from nature, according to Chinese medicine. And it's not saying, you know, it's not an astrological thing. It's not a woo-woo thing. It's just a particular type of labeling certain, you know, passionate behaviors in certain children, you know, fire being more outgoing, being more busy, being out there. And, you know, and again, it's just describing certain behavioral patterns and expressions of how, you know, our children appear. And like you said, we can have several children. They're all different because their souls are here to learn their journey and they're different.
And they all different things from us. And we can figure out what our child needs when you know their element type. And I think one of the best things about it is that it will tell you what their motivators are, what they love to do, what they're going to, you know, be striving to do, what you can encourage them to do because it feeds their inner nature, and also what stresses them, what challenges them. And in those kind of situations, for instance, a wood child, if you're telling them to sit still for too long, it's going to stress them. And so you need to figure out how to handle a child who is really on the move all the time in a productive way. So knowing what their challenges are, either avoiding those challenging situations or being prepared and knowing how you're going to handle them. It's really insightful. It's great insight into your child.
It is wonderfully insightful. And I love the way you describe it in your book. And you also make that questionnaire available for people so they can, you know, kind of check out their own, you know, whatever that is. And also how we can understand maybe our partners or mom and the children we're raising and their different personalities. And again, it's a scoring system. So you're sort of checkboxing all of the, you know, traits that highlight under a particular, you know, nature, wood, water, fire, whatever. You're sort of checking that. And the higher numbers are what the propensity is more of the child. Right. And then, of course, you go down the grading scale because everybody has all of the elements and all of the personality styles and all of the, you know, but so it's whatever's most predominant, you know, in that child. You can go from there and sort of understand in your book how a parenting revolution for evolution, how people can best serve, you know, that particular child's spirit.
Yes, exactly. Right. Their spirit. Thank you. That's exactly right.
Oh, no. And I, you know, I just love the way you talk about that. And there really are, if we really do, in your book, read, oh, my gosh, my child is that. They're more of a water. They're more of a, and again, this is not an astrological thing. It's more of a, it's just describing a style or what a child prefers, or they're more shy. They're quiet. They're observers. They're more within. They're artists.
Yep.
That kind of thing.
You got it.
So it's really terrific to learn about that. Let's talk about our ego-based identities as parents. We got to get rid of that, don't we? Have to really take a look at that.
Yeah, well, how we want to have, and I hear people say this, oh yeah, I wanted to have a child because I wanted a little version of me. And of course, people say that and they think that, and that really is not the right reason to have kids. But regardless, once you have a child, you kind of want to try to get used to, I mean, get rid of that.
Yeah.
You wanting to have them be a little mini me, a little you. Actually, you kind of want them to be better than what we are. That's what future generations are supposed to do, is get, is be better than what we are. But yeah, we often try to infuse ourselves into themselves, but that doesn't help because they are their own little selves. And so, yeah, I think I read a chapter is called Drop the Ego. Just drop the ego and pay attention to your child, who they are as they are. And get your own ideas and your own ego out of it, because it's not about you, at least in terms of what I'm talking about. Sometimes parents do have to make it about them, but as far as with kids and raising kids, it's about the child. So you need to put your ego aside and pay attention to the child.
Yes, you know, a lot of young people I talk to who, you know, have gotten married, and, you know, there's this time bomb that all of their friends are having kids by 27, or, you know, and I see this a lot and hear this a lot. But I don't know if many times they haven't really thought this out. Yeah. It's just, we've got to start raising a family right now. And I'm thinking to myself, you got to sort of lose some of that ego based, that it's not a thing. I've got to have a child to serve me and show all of my friends that, okay, we're moving on in our lives, to have, now we're in the category and we can have friends. It's no, you don't have a child to serve you, right? Yeah. You have children to bring into their souls, into this world, and have the best life they can on their own journey.
Yeah. That's a very good point that people, I had never heard it said that way, but it's true. People have kids who decide to have families because that's the thing to do, or that's to serve, to fill a need for ourselves. Sometimes parents do that. They have an emptiness that they want the child to fill. But yeah, so they're having kids to serve their, fill their purpose, to serve their purposes. And because it's the thing to do, I suppose that's really quite true.
Oh my goodness. You know, and I can't really say, you know, you better get your stuff together before you, I mean, 9 months is not that long when you talk about working on yourself and your unresolved stuff that you might project onto your little one.
Oh,
so
yeah.
It's very hard to say, hey, maybe you should rethink this for a little bit. Get your ducks in a row and just sort of realize what parenting is about.
So, yeah.
These are the folks that I'm giving your book to, by the way. And others as well, as many as I can. One of my favorite chapters in your book is Do No Harm. And that's because in my profession, I deal with a lot of people who were raised in environments of shaming, physical abuse, emotional abuse. Shaming is huge. And of course, the violence, criticizing, that is, oh my gosh, can you elaborate on how important these things are for people?
Well, you're doing a good job with that. And even without the physical violence, or even without the physical violence, even if there's no hitting, words can be certainly as hurtful, if not more hurtful. And kids, again, I don't think that parents or adults understand how sensitive kids, all kids are, to shaming and then being embarrassed and humiliated and scolded in public and embarrassed. And it's, you see it all the time. It's a very natural parental reaction to something. You just end up saying something that is really hurtful to the child. And we often don't even realize how hurtful it is. I just witness it. And you can see it if you just stop and look at a child's face when you say something that is hurtful to them. I mean, you can see it.
Right.
And there are certain kids that are more sensitive to it. There are certain element types that are more sensitive, but all kids are sensitive to that kind of, we all are. Nobody likes to be embarrassed or shamed or scolded or,
right.
So even more so with kids. Yeah, that's, if everybody just did no harm to their children, as in no hurtful words, no hurtful actions, no hitting, the world will already be a much, much better place. Yeah, and that's not that difficult to do no harm.
And we're all human as parents, you know, we're all human beings and we have our own, you know, we want the best for our children usually. So is there a fine line between, not punishment, but I mean, trying to discipline our kids a little bit. I mean, I was out to dinner, you know, with my husband this last weekend and, you know, there was a family sitting down the way from us and they had two little kids running around all the tables. And they let them get up and just sort of crawl around. And it was, you know, whatever. We were just going, well, we were off to the corner. So we weren't really that bothered, I guess. But I mean, we were, what is that fine line between, you know, being disciplining and doing no harm? I mean, sometimes we just blurt things out. We say, please, you people are going to look at you and think that you're out of control and judge you. I mean, how do we navigate that?
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And it's not, I am a big proponent for kinder, gentler parenting, but that does not mean being a pushover and letting your kids run around the restaurant like little
Indians. Yeah, wow.
Yes. So I think that our role is to teach our kids right from wrong, the basic right from wrong. And to guide them in the direction that we think is a good direction for them to go in, based on who they are on the inner. So we guide them. There are a lot of things that I want to say. Sorry, I'm trying to get my thoughts together here. So yes, there is certainly a fine line. And I also believe that in disciplining, absolutely there's a place for discipline. And I have thing that I talk about where there are rules that are above the line and below the line. Right. And the rules that are above the line are usually safety oriented or respect oriented. And those are rules that cannot be broken. There is no negotiating. Those rules, you have to be ready to enforce them every single time that they're broken. And if it's really, really important to you that your child behave correctly at the in a restaurant, then you need to enforce it every single time that you're in a restaurant. And then there are a lot of things that are below the line, like you wish that they cleaned up their room, but it's not a rule that you're going to enforce day in and day out. So very few above the line rules, and you enforce them. And then most of life is below the line. You decide if you're going to let it go or not let it go, but just understand that it's once they get away with something once, they're going to think they can get away with it always. But so, yeah. And so the kids that are running around, I guess you could call that undisciplined, is not, again, it's not helpful to the child. They need, again, they learn from us what is expected of them. They need to know that it's expected that you don't go and bother the people at the next table. So it's up to us to explain to them what is acceptable and what is not acceptable. And maybe some parents don't care that their kids do that. That's what it seems to be. And that, well, I don't know what to say to that.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of like, and these parents didn't. They were laughing and having a nice family group, and the kids just were bored. Yeah.
So, that doesn't bode very well, does it?
It doesn't, and you know, it's. I get the freedom and the, you know, let's explore our environment and things like that. But again, you're right. There, you know, there is a line and all that.
Yeah.
So we're getting close to that time. It's gone so fast. My goodness.
Yes, it has.
And it's wonderful. It's, of course, available on Amazon and everywhere else.
Right? Yep.
And if you want to check out, go ahead, sweetie.
Yeah, Amazon and Barnes & Noble online.
Perfect. Also, check it out on Julie's website, Julie Phillips Hatch, H-A-T-C-H, Phillips, juliephillipshatch.com. And it's A Parenting Revolution for Higher Evolution, Raising Resilient, Responsible, Compassionate Kids from the Inside Out. And you'll learn more about how to teach kids get in touch with themselves from an early age. Because a lot of us, right, we're like, who am I? We're in our 30s. We're still going, I still don't know who I am. I have no identity.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Julie, thank you. Thanks a million for everything you do.
Thank you for having me. I love talking with people that are on the higher consciousness
Aww.
Path. It's really fun. So thank you very much. It's been my pleasure.
Me too. Take good care, Julie.
Thank you. You too.
Okay. Bye-bye. Bye. All right, everybody. Thanks so much for listening. And again, I would say do take care of yourself first, and especially with what we were just talking about as parents. Take care of yourself. Learn more about yourself. Get in touch with your own inner higher level of being loving and compassionate and understanding and empathetic. And then you'll make better parents for your kids because you'll get all that stuff. So take care of yourself first. Learn a little bit more about your backstory and how to be a better soul. And then you'll be great for your kids and the rest of the world. Thanks for joining me on the couch. Talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
You're listening to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle, right here on LA Talk Radio.